ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife Science.
If you've got a temper, here's some interesting news for you. Research out of the Ohio State University has found that venting, or letting off steam, does not actually help. So shouting or losing your temper is a bit pointless. Who knew? Joining us is Dr. Will Grant, Associate Professor in Science Communication at the Australian National Centre for the Public Awareness of Science at the ANU. Will, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip. Thanks for having me.
Now, how did researchers go off their nut and run this study, I suppose?
Well, I guess it does start with a bit of a genesis. One of the researchers here had seen all of those, I don't know if they're around you up there in Sydney, or I don't know if there might be some in Canberra, but where you can go and smash things to vent, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You're angry, mm-hmm. You can go and smash a bunch of plates or things like that. And apparently some people do it and feel like that's a good bit of catharsis, you know. You'll feel better afterwards. The anger is gone. And the researchers said, well, maybe. Let's have an actual look. Mm-hmm. So they dug down and they looked at 154 different studies on anger and tried to boil all of the results together. And it's you know, 10,000 different participants doing all sorts of different interventions, whether different things would help get rid of anger, dilute the anger, or increase the anger. And it turns out, yeah, the venting, anything where you are, you know, just ranting or yelling or doing these smashing plates type activities, doesn't work. It doesn't get rid of the anger, and in fact may prolong it. It might last longer. You might ruminate longer into the anger.
Is that right? Okay. Because yeah. I mean, the theory, I mean, I think almost everyone believes this, don't they? That's, you know, like get it off your chest.
And I think it probably makes a bit of intuitive common sense, yes, but what it seems to be is that's going to, you know, increase your emotional feelings. You know, you're going to validate, it's going to increase your arousal levels, basically. And so they looked at a bunch of activities, not just those sorts of smash plate type activities, but a bunch of activities to see if they might do anything. And they found, you know, various types of physical exercise, which other people might say, oh yeah, this is a good thing. Go for a run. I mean, this has been my classic, feeling a bit cranky. A run might help. I'm a bit of a runner. I like going for a run. No, again, that's a thing that might, it increases your arousal levels, so it doesn't actually help with the anger. So they say you've got to do something that decreases your arousal levels, calms you down, which might be, you know, a nice bit of the calm advice from our mothers might suggest something here.
So, okay, so because the idea is if you're angry, then your heart rate's up, your blood pressure's up. So venting just increases your heart rate and increases your blood pressure. It doesn't make it go away, in other words.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, there's a lot of different studies in here. So it doesn't quite point to the mechanism involved like at a biophysical level. But definitely when they group the different increase your arousal levels. So, you know, that would be doing strenuous exercise, yelling, smashing plates, those kinds of things. Doesn't work. But things that decrease your arousal levels, so they've got, you know, things like stretching or mindfulness activities, breathing exercises, yeah, actually, counting down from 10, yoga, all of those things will decrease your arousal levels, and that is the thing that will take you out of the anger state.
So put on some Mozart.
Yes.
Don't put on an act, in other words.
Yeah, I think so. I think anything that will, I mean, this is just, it's nice to have this study, and clearly there's sort of common sense feelings in either direction, but this certainly goes with the slow down, breathe, count backwards down from 10, something like that is going to be much more effective than going out and smashing things, unless you want to keep the anger. And that's a different thing entirely.
Well, that's a different question, I suppose. Yeah, interesting. All right. A lot of people believe that the world population is just going to increase and increase and increase. This is not so, is it? Human birth rates are actually set to drop drastically within the next, well inside the next 100 years, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a pretty landmark study here in The Lancet. So The Lancet's a big journal of medicine and population health and things like that. These researchers have looked at demographic trends, countries around the world, mm-hmm. over the last 100 years, and then mapping them out with a bunch of different indicators and how they'll change, predicting what things are going to look like out to 2100. So mm-hmm. 80 years into the future. And of course, we can't know. There may be different things might happen, of course, and different interventions from governments. But very much they're looking that significant parts of the world will have birth rates well under the two required for population replacement. In fact, just about everywhere in the world, by 2050, 155 out of 204 countries will be having fewer babies than needed to maintain a stable population.
In other words, that's right, the global population is going to go backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. By 2100, it'll be 198, so nearly all
countries. Nearly every country in the world will be, their birth rate will be at non-replacement.
Absolutely, yeah. So just a few, I mean, and these are, of course, predictions. We don't know for certainty, but it's like only six countries by the year 2100 will have a maintaining population, let alone an increasing population. That's Samoa, Somalia, Tonga, Niger, Chad, and Tajikistan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the main point here is globally, trends are looking like population is going to come down. Now, I don't actually have... I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I know there are a lot of people who will say that's a very good thing, and a lot of people will say that's a very bad thing. But I think the key thing is this is something that policymakers really need to look at and say, okay, well, how are we going to handle this? Because this is a vast shift from, you know, a lot of countries being at sort of replacement rate, but clearly, you know, we in Australia have had an immigration program that has kept our population growing. But out to 100 years in the future, and there won't be people to migrate, we'll have to look at a lot of different things about how population will affect our
Why is it? Is increasing affluence and so on, and therefore, and the increased status of women,
I think, is
the reason for this? Because women have more access to contraception and more ability to have some choices in the matter.
That's been the thing that has most predicted changes in population over the previous 50 years. So, you know, look at success stories, if you want to, and I think legitimately you can claim as success stories. Say Bangladesh, a country that had very high population growth and very high births per woman in, say, the 1960s, 1970s. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it might have been seven or eight children per woman or births per woman. With education, growth in education for girls as probably the number one policy, they did get richer, but I think education for women and girls was the leading thing there, mm-hmm. has brought that down to a birth rate that is much closer to what we might find here in Australia. So it's, you know, something around two births per woman. Mm. So that's one of the large indicators here. There's probably, as countries get richer, yeah, there's a correlation there. It doesn't map directly, but I think globally we're all going through this thing that it seems like we're investing in fewer children, which is, you know, each family to their own, of course. Mm. But the more that countries can invest in one individual child might be better than spreading that around seven children. But there will be consequences with that, particularly if I don't know how old I'll be in 2100. Quite old, probably not
quite
around
old
anymore,
I think.
But, yeah, but I do hope there's enough around to look after me in whatever age I get up to at 2100.
Mm. Yes, as you say, that's right. The idea of migration policies being able to be sustained will need some rethinking. Look, I think a lot of people would think this is a good thing. There's a lot of pressure on the Earth's resources anyway.
Absolutely.
And that a smaller and more sustainable population might be, in fact, signs of a good thing.
Probably. I mean, there's certainly those in the environmental movement would say, you know, we have a lot of people and we are unsustainable as we are. Certainly, that would be vastly worse if our world population was rocketing up to 20 billion. But societies will go into a very difficult crunch if suddenly you have, one child looking after four grandparents or equivalent, when we have whole cohorts, whole generations looking after much more older people. I mean, this is the thing that will mean older people will have to work longer. So there will be a lot of transitions to cope with this effect.
Mm. Yep. Look, finally, if you think pop music used to be better or more unique, you might be right. According to a new study, the lyrics of English language songs have become simpler and more repetitive over the past 40 years. Hey, this is a study for the boomers, isn't it?
Oh, look, I did love this. I thought this is just it's just great. It's pandering to everyone here who might be thinking, yeah, music has gotten a lot more simple. So this is a study just looking at song lyrics in English language over the last 40 years. So the researchers here grabbed the lyrics from 12,000 English language songs from a variety of genres. They've got rap, country, pop, R&B, and rock songs, so like 2,500 from each genre, and compared them between 1980 and 2020. And their findings are that, well, there's a few, and this is the thing that, yes, the older generations might like, is that lyrics have become progressively simpler and easier to understand. Now, I don't know, maybe that's smart on the part of the songwriters to get something that's more compelling. Maybe it's the youth need things that are simpler. I don't know, that's probably sledging a little bit. They also looked and found different trends in things like how negative or positive. So there's more emotional use of emotional words in general. And it's become a lot more negative for pop, country, and R&B, which I don't know why that would be the case, but that's an interesting one as well.
Oh, okay. Well, no, well, I suppose like country music's always been negative.
Yes, potentially.
My log dog like... left me, my lover left me. Cars broken down.
Look, maybe
woke up one morning, my car had broken down.
Negative. I don't know. I think it's fun though. Look, and maybe it's changes in what kids those days in 1980 were looking for, and kids these days are looking for, or maybe it's something that music is consumed differently.
Yeah,
you know, 40 years ago, people would listen on the radio. And they would listen on records, and that is much more communal. Inherently, you know, you're playing in the family living room or your share house living room, whereas there is so much more music is consumed on your own headphones now, and that's got to have some sort of effect on the things
that's true.
Work.
All genres showed, as you say, an increase in the use of anger-related words. Music's got darker and angrier.
I do think there might be something that if you're listening on your headphones, then you can get something that is more resonant with you. Whereas maybe if everyone's listening together in a room, there needs to be something that will work for the 20-10 people in the room. I don't know. There could be some sort of technological effect that is driving something here, but that is just speculation.
Interesting. Well, fascinating as always. Thank you.
No worries, Philip. Great to chat.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.